Columbus, Madison's home for real news and great conversation. A Civic Media Station.
ABC News. I'm Dave Packer. A Delta plane crashes at Toronto's airport, flips upside down. All 80 aboard survive. Toronto Pearson Airport President and CEO Deborah Flint.
First and foremost, there was no loss of life. And this is in due part to our heroic and trained professionals, our first responders at the airport.
Hundreds of federal employees left reeling over the weekend after the mass layoffs from the Trump administration. Elizabeth worked for the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau.
We were just basically tossed out on the streets. And so that has been angering and heartbreaking.
Brutal, life-threatening cold as a polar vortex descends on the Rockies and northern plains today. Wind chills dropping to 60 below in parts of North Dakota. The Vatican says Pope Francis will stay in the hospital a while longer and will require more targeted drug treatment. Officials said the 88-year-old Pope is suffering from a polymicrobial respiratory tract infection. This is ABC News. 88-year-old Pope Francis remains in a hospital in Rome. ABC News chief international correspondent James Longman is in Vatican City.
Earlier today, we did hear that he had a complex clinical picture. They're dealing with a tract infection, a respiratory tract infection. They had sent off tests, which is what happens when you go into the hospital with an infection. They send off samples. They check those samples to see what you're dealing with. They get those back, and it seems like he's not dealing with only one infection. It could be different types of infection. Good news is they know what they are, and they're dealing with them. We were told a few days ago that he'd got over his fever, so that's a good sign, and that basically he's been told to rest.
Uber has filed a lawsuit against DoorDash, accusing the company of uncompetitive practices. The suit filed Friday claims DoorDash threatened to raise fees for restaurants that also use Uber Eats for deliveries. Uber seeking damages and an order requiring DoorDash to change practices. Captain America Brave New World soaring toward a $100 million holiday weekend. Dave Packer, ABC News.
The John and Gordy Show.
Hey, let's go to the phones. Dick is on the line. You can call us, too, 608-879-TALK. Good morning, Dick. What do you got for us this morning?
Well, to the Gaza thing, I mean, his philosophy is this. What's mine is mine, and what's yours is mine, too.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's as simple as that.
That's right.
There's no sovereign nation left in this planet.
That's right.
Weekday morning, 6 till 8, on 92.7 WMDX and the Civic Media app.
Carmelo Anthony for The Bail Project.
Bad news, you've been arrested. Good news, your innocence is proven guilty. If you can pay your bail, good news, you go home to wait your trial. If you can't, sorry, you go to jail to wait. But sure, you still presume innocent. But since you can't afford bail, you've lost your freedom. That's not right. And that's why The Bail Project helps those who can't afford it while fighting to end cash bail. Because freedom should be free.
Brought to you by the Ad Council.
This is your local Civic Media radio station. Want to hear even more? Anytime? Find all of it at civicmedia.us.
Badgers face the Fighting Illini. Hi, I'm Mike Clemens with sports. Men's college basketball. The Wisconsin Badgers host Illinois tomorrow night at the Kohl Center. Game time 7:30. Wisconsin coming off that big win at number 7th ranked Purdue, 94-84 over the weekend. Marquette will be at home tomorrow night when they host Seton Hall. NBA, the Bucks return to action Thursday night when they take on the Clippers in Milwaukee. The Badgers men's hockey team in a slump. They lost to number 8th ranked Ohio State in Columbus, 4-2. Wisconsin has now lost 6 in a row. Associate head coach Todd Knott asked why the team hasn't been able to score more than 2 goals a game so far this month.
I wish I had a better answer for you on that one. I don't. And disappointing, especially with us getting good crowd showing up right now. I know our guys are extremely disappointed in the results over the weekend, but when you talk about Ohio State, Penn State, and they had some snarl to them, so give them credit. I thought they played very well.
That's Badgers hockey coach Todd Knott with sports. I'm Mike Clemens.
On your entertainment beat, I'm Pete Schwabe. The British Oscars, also known as the BAFTAs, which stands for British Academy of TV and Film Awards, aired Sunday night, and the show's award winners will only keep people guessing who will take home Oscars as we get closer to the Academy Awards. Conclave took home Best Picture, which surprised critics as it hadn't really won much on other award shows. Variety reports that Conclave beat out The Brutalist and Anora, which had recently been gaining momentum after winning the Critics' Choice Awards, Directors Guild, and Producers Guild Awards. Members of the Hollywood Press say this this will give Conclave momentum heading up to the Oscars on March 2nd, as there is quite a bit of crossover between BAFTA and Oscar voters. Taking home the Best Actor at the BAFTAs was Adrien Brody for his performance in The Brutalist, Mikey Madison won Best Actress for Anora, and in the Best Supporting categories, it was Zoe Saldana winning for her performance in Amelia Perez, and Kieran Culkin surprising people by winning for his performance in A Real Pain. For more showbiz fun, tune in to Nightlight with me, Peach Waba, weeknights from 6 to 8 p.m. on the Civic Media Radio Network.
Local radio for you and your community. It's Civic Media's mission with stations across Wisconsin. Find your favorites at civicmedia.us.
I'm meteorologist Mace Michaels. Cold weather advisory in effect. Mostly clear and bitter cold tonight. A low of 15 below, wind chill to 25 below. Mostly sunny and staying cold tomorrow. A high of 5 above. And partly sunny and near 10 above Wednesday. Currently it's 2 below.
Jane Matinair and Greg Bach.
Coming up on the show, tariffs and Wisconsin businesses. We talk to someone who has firsthand knowledge. Join us.
Matinair on air, weekday mornings at 11.
A new choice. Madison's Real News and Great Conversation, 92.7 WMDX.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
Do mind. I mind very damn much. I mind about Donald Trump's lawlessness, the fact that he is a convicted felon criminal who's doing more criminal things every day from his perch in the White House. I mind very much that he's turned over the kings to our American kingdom to a billionaire overlord and his, like, barely out of adolescent minions.
Out of adolescence, depending on how you quantify it.
Yes. What do they say? Folks, that's Jess P.S. She's on the board with me. My name's Maggie Dawn. You're listening to The Maggie Dawn Show. Those smooth, dulcet male tones that you hear, that is Tom Paulswitz, my special guest co-host every Thursday. What do they say that the male mind doesn't reach full maturity until when? It's late 20s.
For women, it's like 28 to 29, according to some reckonings. I'm still an adolescent.
I have raised three children, and then they're all in their at least late 20s now, and I can say that it takes time.
I would want no
19 to 22 year old anywhere near the keys to the kingdom.
The prefrontal cortex just is not developed enough. That's where we make those rational decisions. It's not cooked. Yeah.
It's not fully baked.
It's not done yet.
It's raw. Right.
None of these are fully baked ideas with the fully baked folks to execute them. Again, we are talking about the state of play these days. And topic number two for Tom and I and Jess P.S. on the board and each and every one of you this afternoon is this. Donald Trump promised us world peace. He said the conflict in Ukraine would be over the very day that he was sworn into office. He has promised us cheaper eggs, cheaper gas, cheaper housing, free childcare, and a border wall, and maybe somebody else is going to pay for it. It goes on and on and on. He has promised everyone everything, unless you're Black and brown, an immigrant, a woman in the LGBTQIA plus community, or really, really poor and struggling. Then you can go kick rocks. But Tom, I say all of this, and folks, please do not mistake my blitheness for any lack of concern or indignation. Tom, what is really concerning to me, because I have been trained as an economist, I consider myself an economist, though I only have a master's degree in applied mathematical econometrics and not a full PhD. But what concerns me is that one of the things that the U.S. government has done extraordinarily well, with some exceptions, but very well, in fact, has led the world for many decades, has been the nonpartisan collection and sharing of data with the public, whether that's about housing, lending, employment, you name it, the data was getting collected. We also did incredible research and data analysis and shared that data and those the output of those analyses with people. What we're seeing from government agency to government agency is data being scrubbed. They're putting up static PDFs. You cannot search the data. You cannot download it if the data is even still available. They're pulling down the research papers. It is like the entirety of the U.S. data collection, which, again, is done by, and I'm going to use this word with a lot of love and respect, technocrats and data wonks, yes, and nonpartisan civil servants, public servants, who would provide this information to researchers and the public at large so that we could actually look at and assess what impact various policies are having, who actually benefited from Trump's 2017 tax cuts. Hint, it wasn't the middle class.
Correct.
I am so petrified, Tom, that because we're seeing it already, we're only 3 weeks in, that one of their main points will be to basically stop data collection, or it will become Big Brother data collection, you know, like tracking women's periods.
Yes.
What are we supposed to do? How do we demand that this not occur? How do people gain some sight lines on the fact that they're actually like removing information? It's hard, right? It's like trying to prove a negative. If I didn't look for it before, how do I know that it's gone? I've had researchers and friends of mine that work in academia call me and they're like, yeah, this data source that I use, like, it's gone.
Gone. Can't use it. Right. And I think the real challenge is going to be moving forward. There's going to be a hole in the data. That's even if we're allowed to get back to gathering the data. So there's going to be a hole. But more importantly, tremendous amounts of research and development using this data is now not possible. And now there has to be another way to try to look for proxies or other ways to think about how to get this information. But I said this before earlier on the show. This is our data. We own it. They can't hide it from us. So that to me is incredibly frustrating. And I think there has to be some legal avenues to be able to go and at least have this data published. My concern, though, is that the additional collection is probably going to stop.
Correct.
And then just what you had talked about, I think even scarier is the data that the government starts to publish, I'm personally going to question. I'm looking at the Bureau of Labor Statistics going, I can't trust job reports now. I can't trust a whole bunch of things that I would make decisions on or at least have an idea of what's happening. And this is the fundamental move that autocrats make to make sure people don't really know what's going on. And so to pretend like this isn't a big issue, and I'm glad you're bringing it up because I think this is one of the things that just isn't being talked about within the whole context of all this other stuff. But this could be fundamentally the biggest, I think, problem that we'll have moving forward trying to maintain democracy.
When I think I have been thinking about this problem since November 6th, because I know the data that I used as an economist to complete my master's degree. I used information from the Bureau of Labor Statistics. I know all economists that are good faith economists have used U.S. data coming from the federal government to help conduct their analyses. It fits and it dovetails with their attack on all of higher education, right? It's like, oh, well, we'll just take the data away and then they can't do anything. They can't fulfill their research obligations, not to mention the defunding of research, period, right? So we won't collect observable data. We won't conduct the research. We'll manipulate the data that is there. We'll start collecting data that is, in fact, misleading. Because I can tell you this much. One of the reasons that I decided to pursue an advanced degree in economics was because there was this intuitive part of my brain that was screaming at me that someone can snow you. They can pull a fast one on you. They can run a grift on you if you can't at least have some sensibility and get under the numbers and know, did they just create an algorithm, or did they just create an econometric formula that will, of course, produce the outcome that they want? Because you can do that. If you talk to statisticians and mathematicians, they will tell you can manipulate data to make it show what you want.
Yes.
But even if you don't, if you're not a bad faith data scientist, if you don't have the data, you can't even do the analysis at all.
Right. Or the data is manipulated to help you, to make you think about what could be happening. Like, I'm looking at a jobs report. What if they decide to stop monitoring or at least measuring jobs that women have?
Right. Well, because we can't use the word woman anymore. Right. Like, can we the watchword and guide when you look at disparity analyses at any level, right, is you aggregate and anonymize, but you still splice it by various demographic characteristics. Yes. And I don't just mean race and gender. I mean income quartile. So, for example, in 2017, when Republicans passed the first Trump Tax Cut Act for billionaires, there were about 80 different versions of this bill, and they came in quick succession because they were everybody's horse trading for their favorite thing, and there were pork in the bill. But the version that passed, they basically pushed it through really quickly, and they did not wait for the Congressional Budget Office to produce what is called I'm going to forget the exact name of it, but it's something like the dispersion analysis or the dispersion impact analysis, which is the fancy words that data geeks would use for, hey, we're going to run the numbers out and we're going to see on a absolute dollar and percentage basis who's going to benefit the most from these tax cuts. And the reason they didn't wait for that from the CBO was because it would have shown them exactly what's happened, which is... basically, the bottom 90% of us have actually seen a net tax increase from the Trump tax cuts, while the top 1% and top 5% have seen huge reductions to the tune of billions of dollars. They didn't want that analysis.
And the analysis, and the analysis to be able to tell you how much it's going to add to the deficit and the debt. They didn't wait for that either, right?
No.
We don't want to know because we know it's going to be negative.
Well, not only did they not want to know, they don't want you to know. They don't want me to know, because then we can hold them accountable. This is one of those things that, again, is kind of under the surface for people. And it is one of the things that I have the greatest amount of existential fear, because dismantling these systems will also not have just terrible and bad impacts and cost lives in the near term. It will set back global policy, global economic policy, global healthcare policy, all of these things. And believe you me, if Elon Musk is now scraping data out of all of these U.S. systems, he's not a benign overlord. He is a profit incentive. He has conflicts to the tune of 15 plus billion a year and contracts.
Currently.
And then they're going to take away the metrics by which we would judge whether or not they're fulfilling the promises while he scrapes the data, maximizes his profit, and pushes his tax rates lower and lower. Does anybody think this is going to be good for the middle class? 855-757-855-752-4842. We got a caller and a whole load of text messages. We're going to get to those next. How will we know the impacts of what they're doing?
Yes.
More on this with me, Maggie Dawn, my special guest co-host Tom Paulswitz, and Jess P.S. on the board right here on the Civic Media Radio Network, where we're all about real news and great conversation.
Welcome to Madison's Real News and Great Conversation, 92.7 WMDX.
Tons of glass artists share the same passion for eye-catching art as Ignite Glass and Gifts, so we're showcasing their work alongside our talented local artists and our in-house Ignite artists. The latest techniques, the hottest colors, and mind-blowing designs are here for you to enjoy. Madison's favorite for glass gifts and vape, Ignite Glass and Gifts, Monona Drive, Williamson Street, and O'Dana Road, plus IgniteGlassandGifts.com. Do your eyes a favor and see this stuff.
Every story matters, and the Civic Media Radio Network is celebrating Black History Month by honoring the powerful stories of Wisconsin's own trailblazers. Meet Rob Dees, the Madison artist and educator, adds his own twist to Black History Month.
For me, it's always a responsibility to be Black History every day. I appreciate the month, and I'm going to celebrate it to the fullest, but it's also an importance that to be Black History every day.
Rob lives what he says, too. One example, mentoring troubled kids who embrace their own stories and share through the power of hip-hop music.
Trying to get kids to really understand their story is important, their struggle is important. I've often heard the word inspiration associated with what I do, but like my biggest hope of inspiration is to inspire others. And I feel like these babies are the future, so we gotta inspire them.
Rob is lifting up the next generation while still honoring the past. Listen for more inspiring stories all month long. I'm Terry Barr.
My part-time service in the Army National Guard makes it possible for me to be more for the community I call home. My training helps me at work when I lead by example. My service in the Army National Guard allows me to keep my community and those I care about safe from threats. Learn more about how you too can live and serve part-time close to home by visiting NationalGuard.com.
Sponsored by the Wisconsin Army National Guard. Aired by the Wisconsin Broadcasters Association and this station.
This is Madison's Real News and Great Conversation, 92.7 WMDX.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
Baby love, I think I've been a little too kind. Didn't notice you walking all over my peace of mind. And the shoes I gave you as a present. Putting someone first only works when you're in their top five. And by the way, I'm going out tonight.
I might have to go out tonight. Might be time for an adult beverage. I don't know. Folks, my name is Maggie Dawn. You're listening to The Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. I got Jess P.S. with me running the board. I got Tom Paulsowitz also with me, my special guest co-host every Thursday. He's one of the most reasonable guys in politics. And we've got each and every one of you joining us for one of our great discussions that we try to engage every day here on the Civic Media Radio Network. In this second hour, we've been talking about one of my greatest fears. If you've not listened to me before, I'm a lawyer and an economist. I'm a geek. I'm a nerd. I'm a data wonk. I believe that we can use data to analyze and try to hold government accountable, that it can help us answer some of our lifetime's most difficult public policy questions. I know what good faith economic analysis looks like. I know what good data analysis looks like. I know what bad data analysis looks like. And I'm freaked the frickin' frack out that one of the main items that the Trump administration has begun to accomplish and is going to continue to accomplish is one, manipulation of data, two, not collecting data correctly, three, not sharing data with the public. We're seeing this already on all kinds of government agency websites, and that this is going to hurt regular Americans so very, very much. But it is like two or three steps removed, right? It's not like the OMB memo and then the Medicaid funding isn't coming, right? This is one of those, you know, thing happens and then the effect happens a little later. So kind of hard for people to put together. But this is a very real and ongoing concern for myself. I've been hearing from my friends that work in academia. They're freaked out. My doctor friends are freaked out. Everybody's freaked out because data collection and analysis, in addition to protecting public safety, and we use data collection and analysis to help protect the public, that is government's job.
But Maggie, you hit it on the head earlier when you said, what are they going to collect?
Yes.
I think that's the scarier part, because, you know, businesses use metrics all the time. You know, I work with a ton of businesses, and one of my favorite sayings is, you know, do you think you know it or do you know it?
Yeah.
And organizations do this all the time. And you got to believe that Elon Musk is all over metrics. So what scares me the most is, what data are they collecting?
Well, and who gets to use it? right?
And who gets to use it, and what are they going to use it for? That's the scary part to me.
Yeah, if you aren't familiar with Cambridge Analytica, sit down, do a Google, go down the rabbit hole. It's frightening. These systems, meaning things like social media, and using data and analytics about people's behavior and what we click on and how our attention is moved, those systems were originally developed through the Department of Defense as an offensive weapon in countries that the U.S. had declared as enemies of the state to help unravel governments. That's what it was originally designed to do. Again, I said yesterday, who do you think is the happiest about the taking a torch to the entirety of the federal government and the fracturing of U.S. society along racial lines, along the lines of sexual identity, gender? Putin, Kim Jong-un, President Xi, they're dancing in the streets. We got some callers and texters. Want to give some love to the text lines. Folks, if you want to join this great conversation, 855-757-855-752-4842. John from Madison says this: I feel Trump should be vigorously called out for what he is by Democrats. He is a criminal acting like the criminal he is. I seldom hear any Democrat use this word that describes him accurately. Why is it not used more? Is there a general rule not to use words like criminal, racist? I'll throw in rapist. And if so, why? We need to call a spade a spade. Yeah, we do. He was civilly convicted of sexual assault. He is a convicted felon. He's an insurrectionist. He is a criminal, and he is behaving like one.
Yeah, Maggie, here's the challenge with that one, though, is who's listening? Even if we call him out, like all of us have been calling him out for a long time. But the question is, who's listening and who's it getting through to? Right. The Fox News bubble, it's like that's never happening. So how do you get to people that need to hear this? Because most people think like this is normal. Oh, he's just, you know, changing course. And this is part of a new administration. And the rest of us know this is not normal by any stretch of the imagination. How do we break through that, especially with so many news organizations? Like, we're trying, but so many news organizations are just capitulating and saying, wow, isn't this interesting? What do you think about what's happening? You know, Axios, Politico. I mean, there's so many groups that are just, they're not even calling him out anymore. They're just saying, wow, what do Democrats think about what they're doing? And it's I don't know. And it's going to be an interesting next couple of weeks to see who stands up and who doesn't.
I think, you know, and part of the challenge, I think, coming out of the election, right? To me, what crystallized in my mind is I have to, and I keep saying this today, and I apologize for wearing out this phrase, I have to be able to walk and chew gum at the same time. I can I can condemn Donald Trump's lawlessness, but there is a whole enormous group of people for whom that doesn't matter. It doesn't resonate. What does resonate, what did motivate a lot of the votes for Donald Trump, and he used racism, right? He is a racist, put a box around black and brown people in the LGBTQIA community and women and said, like, they're the problem. They're why you're feeling true economic angst and insecurity. Voters were good faith in that they were experienced at a real intuitive basic level. The fix is in. The system's screwing me. I'm not doing better. I'm worried about my kids. This is a real economic fear. He metastasized that and said, blame these people that have never had control over the reins of power in this government, who have never been the ones to reap the lion's share of the wealth and the productive capacity of this nation. But the real culprit is Elon Musk, Mark Zuckerberg, Peter Thiel, and the billionaire class that he wants to give more tax cuts to. All right. Richard from Waukesha, I see you. Kurt from Madison. Mark from Prairie du Sac. Folks on the text line, I see you. We're going to get and go right to the phones and the text lines after this brief message. You got the beautiful Pam Yonke coming up with our farm update. My name is Maggie Dawn with Tom Paulswitz and Jess P.S. right here on the Civic Media Radio Network. Callers and texts are next. 855-752-4842.
A voice for Madison, real news and great conversation, 92.7 WMDX.
ABC News. I'm Dave Packer. A Delta plane crashes at Toronto's airport, flips upside down. All 80 aboard survive. Toronto Pearson Airport President and CEO Deborah Flint.
First and foremost, there was no loss of life. And this is in due part to our heroic and trained professionals, our first responders at the airport.
Hundreds of federal employees left reeling over the weekend after the mass layoffs from the Trump administration. Elizabeth worked for the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau.
We were just basically tossed out on the streets. And so that has been angering and heartbreaking.
Brutal, life-threatening cold as a polar vortex descends on the Rockies and northern plains today. Wind chills dropping to 60 below in parts of North Dakota. The Vatican says Pope Francis will stay in the hospital a while longer and will require more targeted drug treatment. Officials said the 88-year-old Pope is suffering from a polymicrobial respiratory tract infection. This is ABC News.
Your news, conversations, and a whole lot of fun. It's all on your local Civic Media radio station or the Civic Media app.
Badgers face the Fighting Illini. Hi, I'm Mike Clemens with sports. Men's college basketball. The Wisconsin Badgers host Illinois tomorrow night at the Kohl Center. Game time 7:30. Wisconsin coming off that big win at number 7th ranked Purdue, 94-84 over the weekend. Marquette will be at home tomorrow night when they host Seton Hall. NBA, the Bucks return to action Thursday night when they take on the Clippers in Milwaukee. The Badgers men's hockey team in a slump. They lost to number 8th ranked Ohio State in Columbus, 4-2. Wisconsin has now lost 6 in a row. Associate head coach Todd Knott asked why the team hasn't been able to score more than 2 goals a game so far this month.
I wish I had a better answer for you on that one. I don't. And disappointing, especially with us getting good crowds showing up right now. I know our guys are extremely disappointed in the results over the weekend, but when you talk about Ohio State, Penn State, and they had some snarl to them, so give them credit. I thought they played very well.
That's Badgers hockey coach Todd Knott with sports. I'm Mike Clemens.
You can always continue the conversation on social media. Share your thoughts when you find and follow Civic Media on Facebook, X, and Instagram.
On your entertainment beat, I'm Pete Schwabe. Sometimes Marvel movies are review-proof, such is the case with Captain America: Brave New World, which was number one at the box office this past weekend. Despite mediocre reviews, the franchise flick pulled in $192 million at the worldwide box office to lead the way. Theater owners in the U.S. were particularly happy, as the fourth Captain America film brought in about $100 million domestically. Not bad for February. The other big film opening this weekend was Paddington in Peru. The third installment in the popular Paddington franchise finished in second place, bringing in $13 million at the box office. Paddington will probably find a bigger audience when it goes to streaming and VOD. Sony Pictures' Heart Eyes took in about $10 million in its second weekend to finish in third place, and it was Mufasa the Lion King holding steady in fifth place during its ninth week of release with $4.2 million. Starting to think I'm the only person that hasn't seen this movie. For more showbiz fun, tune into Nightlight with me, Pete Schwabe, weeknights from 6 to 8 p.m. on the Civic Media Radio Network.
I'm meteorologist Rodney Price. Cold weather advisory remains in effect. Overnight, mostly clear skies with lows between 10 and 15 below. Wind chills 20 to 30 below, thanks to a northwest breeze. On Tuesday, sunshine, highs in the mid-single digits. Currently, 4 degrees below zero.
This St. Paddy's Day, remember the story of Lenny the Leprechaun. Lenny moved to Madison searching for a place to live.
If I find the right place, I'll find me pot of gold.
So he went online and searched up movetomadison.com.
Ooh, what riches!
Yes, Lenny, riches indeed. People that sell with the Aaron Weber Group get the best price with updated market reports and instant property value quotes, virtual or in-person meetings too. Find your pot of gold when selling with the Aaron Weber Group, powered by Compass.
Governor Tony Evers is set to share his budget address to the state on Tuesday, February 18th at 7 p.m., You can count on the Civic Media team to have it covered for you here, live.
And when the polls close, you'll also hear your primary election results from the races important to you and your family.
Live coverage of the elections in your area and the budget address, Tuesday, February 18th at 7 p.m. on your local Civic Media radio station and the Civic Media app. Pete Schwabe.
On the next Nightlight, I welcome Chicago-based comedian Jim Flanagan and veterans advocate and founder of Arizona Warriors, Jason Moon, joins the show. Let's light it up.
Nightlight with Pete Schwabe, weeknights from 6 till 8.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
Everybody, my name is Maggie Dawn. You are listening to the Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. You can listen anywhere you have your phone by downloading the Civic Media app. It is free wherever you get your apps from. You can, of course, also join us via YouTube on the Civic Media's YouTube channel and at Maggie Dawn Show on the Book of Faces, Insta, and X. I have a great, fabulous, very reasonable co-host with me every Thursday. His name is Tom Paulswitz, and I've got great and awesome and super fun Just PS on the board. We're having a good time with each and every one of you. The topics might be dark. The topics might be challenging. What's happening may be scary, but we're going to try to do a good time of it here, engaging with each and every one of you. It is important to come together, even in disagreement, and spend some time talking about these things. Our topic this half hour, this hour, has been my very real fear, and we're seeing the impacts of this already, that the U.S. government under Donald Trump will basically stop collecting a lot of data. The data that they do collect will be sort of predetermined with a very partisan bend to it. It won't be truly objective, good, clean data measurements. And that how they analyze it will also be predetermined. Project 2025, very explicitly in a number of different areas, said that scientists and researchers that work for the federal government will basically be litmus tested. We will tell you what the outcome is, and then you will generate bad research to support the outcome that we want. Even a third grader who's studied the scientific method for, 5 minutes knows that that's not how it's supposed to work. And who gets the data? Who gets access to it? How is it used? All of those things. That's what we're discussing. The Atlantic just this week, its cover, CDC data are disappearing. The agency has already removed scientific data from public view. More could follow. Last week,
and actually, Maggie, the CDC just published again their weekly report. Missing though in the report was bird flu.
Yeah,
which this administration
decided
that it doesn't exist, or we're not going to tell people about it.
Yeah, well, that worked so well for COVID.
Yeah, it doesn't exist. Right. It's not a thing. It
doesn't exist.
It's like trans people. They don't exist. We just won't talk about them. We don't use the word. It doesn't. This is from The Atlantic. Last week, scientists began to hear cryptic and foreboding warnings from colleagues. They were telling one another the same thing. Data on the website were about to disappear or be altered.
Yes.
What they feared quickly came to pass. Here's some of the other things that are missing from the CDC's website. Youth Risk Behavior Surveillance System. The Agency for Toxic Substances and Disease Registries, Social Vulnerability Index, and the Environmental Justice Index. The landing page for HIV data. I mean, it goes on and on. Terrifying. Absolutely terrifying. I have researcher friends that told me in the time period between, like, once people were like, oh yeah, the data might be a problem, as soon as they had that clear thought before Trump was inaugurated, people have been downloading tons of data because they know it's going to disappear. This begs the question, and I want to go to the phones right away here. Who does the data collection now? And I want to tell you all, and we're going to need some double verification of data, right? We need researchers to do it. We need our universities more than ever. Here's what else. We need our local and state governments now more than ever. I was on a call this week that had a few mayors on it. maybe a couple of county executives. And I made this point to them. And I said, please reach out to some data scientists. Look at the data that you're collecting, improve it, improve your data collection methods. Be sure that you're collecting the right amount, that you're preserving it correctly. Milwaukee County, when I worked there as their chief legal officer, we really were of the vanguard of putting out all kinds of publicly available data on these dashboards to let people hold us accountable to see what was happening. It's more critical now than ever. If you are listening, call up your mayor, call up your village board president, send an email to the Evers administration or the governor's office in your state and say, what are you doing to collect data? What is your data collection plan for this administration? How are you collecting employment numbers? I want to know how you're going to do this. You cannot rely on the feds anymore.
Correct.
Let's go to the phones, Tom. Richard from Waukesha. How are you, sir? What do you have to say this afternoon?
Is this for me?
Yes, sir.
Oh, well, I've been listening to you, and I've been seeing this for a while. I was fortunate to grow up with a lot of West Pointers and CIA former people.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
And if you study the history from Eisenhower and generation change up to now, it's a progression. You talked at one time about Ronald Reagan, and it's starting to, it's kind of snowballing. And it seems, you know, my father had been a navigator, and why in the old days, sometimes you had to navigate by dead reckoning, you know, and you'd follow, patterns before you, made a absolute decision. And you need technology, but you can do both. And technology has advanced so much. To close the door to the technology is very suspicious.
Yes. To close the door to the data. You know, to the data analysis.
Yeah. More than suspicious.
And the ability to get it. Yeah. It's like minor fascism turning, you know, turning strong.
Yeah. Rick, you put your finger right on it.
Yes.
Right? Like, democracies, in part, rely not just upon true freedom of speech, but our ability to access accurate information, our ability to access not just news, but accurate information and data, our ability to access the research that
ordinary people,
ordinary
people having access to that information.
That's exactly what I mean. Yep. It requires democracy, necessitates.
Yes.
It is a necessary but not sufficient condition for democracy that you have a citizenry that can be informed. We're dealing with the will to be informed right now. But if they take away the very means, even if we were to restore our collective will to be an informed, engaged electorate, if they have robbed us of the tool to be informed, where does that lead us?
Yep.
Folks, my name is Maggie Dawn. We got Tom Paulsowitz with us. We got Jess P.S. on the board. You're welcome to join this great conversation, 855-752-4842. I say that not to pat myself on the back, no, but because here at Civic Media, we try every day to bring you real news and to engage in a great conversation with each and every one of you. There's two ways that you can do that, via text and phone, 855-752-4842. And there's also a new fun way on this program that's a little special here. We are premiering a brand new segment tomorrow. If you have screamed at your radio because you wish I would just shut up and wrap it up, get to the point, Maggie. I've heard enough from you. I'm sure you felt that way. Then this new segment is just for you. You can send a question in via text, and my good friend Jamie will pick it up. We're keeping a hopper of these. Or you can email it in directly to askmaggie@civicmedia.us. And tomorrow, whomever is running the board and my good friend, Jamie, my senior producer, will pick at random your questions to ask me, and they will turn a timer on, and I will only have 60 seconds to answer your questions. So you can join us this third way for this special segment. Tomorrow, our premiere segment at 3 p.m., Ask Maggie with each and every one of you. I only get 60 seconds. Maybe I'll do it in less than 60. I highly doubt that.
Do we get to bet on this? Because I'll take the over.
There'll be a whole sideline in Vegas about, like, exactly. Can Maggie answer any questions in 60 seconds?
Yeah, because there'll be 40 seconds of context first, and then...
Context is... Tom, you taught me that context first before content, otherwise...
It's incredibly important, yes.
Yep. Folks, you're welcome to join us this afternoon. Not wait for tomorrow, 855-75-CIVIC, 855-752-4842. Kurt from Madison, sir, you're up next. What do you have to say?
Yes, Maggie, you are guilty because the longer we're on hold and the more information you give us, the more it becomes difficult to stick to what we're initially going to say when we called into the show in the first place.
But, Kurt, you are so well-read, you are so engaged that you can speak to any of the topics that we happen to find ourselves in.
So, just real quick sidebar. I went to school for biomedical electronics in La Crosse when I got out of the Army, and it was a practical exam. It was intense. You had to build a circuit board. He messed with it. You had to troubleshoot it. I got a D. And he gave me a second chance to resurrect my grade. So we went in, and he pointed. He said, I want you to measure the voltage here. I measured it, and he said, wrong. And it was just a basic DC voltage measurement. And I said, what are you talking about? The multimeter, it's showing you the voltage right there. He said, no, you didn't ask me in reference to what. Yeah. So he puts the ground probe on the other side of the power supply. So instead of being 15 volts, now it's 30 volts. So that lesson stuck with me my entire life. And you can use it across the board in many other disciplines, which you cited on your show today.
Yes.
Both of you did.
Yes.
So when someone makes a comment and they regurgitate a Fox soundbite and they really don't understand economics, or they don't understand whatever it is that you're arguing about, especially politicians, The very first thing you should be saying is in reference to what?
Yes.
And the reason the Democrats fail so badly at communicating to the people, like the Native Indians of this country, we fail to keep the story going. Mm. We never keep repeating what has happened in the past in reference to what. And if you do that, you force them down another avenue where they have to respond to it. Yeah. So that's my viewpoint on it.
Kurt, awesome. I love that. Great it comment. Works even with our discussion earlier, Tom, about yes. pro-life. Pro-life in reference to what?
What?
Yep. In reference to what?
Fantastic.
I can't believe we're coming up on our last segment of the day. Don't worry, everybody. I will put a marker down for next week. I'll let you know tomorrow when I'm going to dig deep on how Donald Trump's ethnic cleansing is going to impact you, your pocketbook, and your family right here in the state of Wisconsin. I'll let you know tomorrow when I'm going to cover that topic. But let's stay here because y'all are very engaged. We're talking about what to do when they shut down all of the government data systems, when we stop collecting data, when we stop analyzing it objectively, when we stop sharing it with the American public. And I just want to also say this. Not only should we be asking our research institutions, our public universities, to make sure that they are collecting data, because a lot of research institutions have been relying on the data that the federal government collects. We should also be asking our local and state governments. I just want to make this really clear. Relying on the legal system to correct this or fill this gap, relying on freedom of information requests won't work because it takes a really long time.
Exactly. Too slow.
Expensive and inefficient often, and sometimes ineffective.
Yes.
Not what we want to see. We're going to take more of your calls and texts. We might even get a little sports in before the end of the hour with my good friend and yours, Tom Paulswitz, with our good friend, Jess P.S. on the board. And I'm your host, Maggie Dawn. You're listening to The Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. Keep it locked and join us. 855-75-CIVIC, 855-752-4842. We go back to the phone and text lines next.
You have to stop the world a new choice.
Madison's real news and great conversation, 92.7 WMDX.
Hey there, folks. It's Carrie Joy with your Work Money Minute and a tip about saving money when you are renting a car. So you know how you get to the rental counter and then they ask you if you want to prepay for gas so you don't have to bring the car back full? Well, I used to get sweaty in those moments as I wasn't sure what the right money choice was. Prepaying for gas at the rental counter? Not worth it. First off, rental companies often charge more per gallon on the prepay than local gas stations do at the pump. And even if they're about equal, fees or taxes on your rental can tip the scales against prepaying. And you'd have to return that car completely empty to get the full value of buying prepaid gas. Otherwise, you're just buying gas for Avis and Budget or whoever. Quick note, make sure you have time to refill the tank before you return the rental. If you don't prepay and you don't fill up, they are going to charge you like they have refilled that car with liquid gold. For more tips, head to workmoney.org. Till next time, this is Carrie Joy saying, take good care.
What's your go-to when the cold winds of winter blow? A heavy coat? A hat? For many of us, it's lip stuff, too. But did you know one of the most popular brands, Carmex, the one in the little yellow tube or tub, is a Wisconsin product? It's made in Franklin, a suburb of Milwaukee, and it's shipped to more than 60 countries every year. So can you guess the original use for Carmex? Fixing squeaky doors, actual lip balm, or to soften baseball gloves? The answer coming up. Alfred Woolwig created Carmex in the kitchen of his Dodge County home in Rubicon in 1937. He hand-poured thousands of jars until deciding to automate the manufacturing process in the 70s. Now, can you guess the original use for Carmex when it was created? More than 80 years ago. It's always been meant to be a lip balm, but people use it on other dry or itchy skin areas too. It remains a true slice of Wisconsin. I'm Terry Barr for the Civic Media Radio Network.
Welcome to Madison's Real News and Great Conversation, 92.7 WMDX.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
Stars above. Without it, life is a wasted time. Look inside your heart and I'll look inside mine.
Look inside your heart. Does this look even like concepts of a plan? Does it look like it's going to make sense? Does it look like it's going to help you and your family, your neighbor's family? Are we treating our neighbor as we would have ourselves treated? Wait a minute, that's not exactly what treat. Do other. I'll just go with the do unto others. I think it's don't covet thy neighbor's wife and do unto others as you would have done unto you. I'm mixing the golden rules up, Tom. It's late in the afternoon, folks. My name is Maggie Dawn. You're listening to the Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. Joined as I am every Thursday by my special guest co-host, Tom Paulswitz. My thanks to Jess P.S. for running the board today on the Maggie Dawn Show. And my thanks to each and every one of you. We've had a really great conversation this afternoon. And I want to let you all get your last 2 cents, nickel, dime, or quarter in. Matt from Menominee Falls, new texter, saying this. I think the reason Musk is pulling all this data is to track where all the money is going. He's a businessman, yes. So they do that. What is BS is he is gathering all this sensitive information, this classified information with it. If he wanted this data, he could just go to agencies and ask them for the data, but he's inserting himself in at the agency level. He's probably worried about people lying to him. And he also points this out, FYI, the federal government Trump payoff was paused until a hearing this coming Monday, not unlike the birthright citizenship executive order, which had the same exact cadence and now has been permanently enjoined pending further litigation. We'll see. One of the points, Matthew, that I think is really important here is Elon Musk doesn't need to take over the systems.
No.
And I disagree with you, Matthew, here. He doesn't have to worry about someone lying to him. He can, I mean, this is one of the smartest guys on the planet, hypothetically. You can ask for like the source data. You can tell by looking at metadata if data has been extracted and then manipulated. There's a lot of ways to verify and authenticate raw data. He could be doing that. He could be running this like an audit function. you can use different samples. There's all kinds of different ways. He doesn't need to actually have his little minions in the systems. Yes. But I really appreciate your points, Matt. My further concern, and we've been talking about this, Tom, is what does he use it for? Who's watching the watcher here? If the watcher is Musk, who's making sure that he doesn't leak this sensitive information? What servers is it on? Who are they secure? Who can hack the servers? What if he decides to deploy it to make himself richer?
Yeah. And here's another component is I think the Trump administration learned from the last go around that when you try to change things, it can be undone. So there's a huge focus on breaking as many things as possible right now to make it much harder to undo.
To fix it. Yep. And to do it all at such a lightning speed.
Do it all at the same time.
I said this week. This isn't the objective here isn't about the chaos. This isn't some new set of objectives either. This is unprecedented. What is unprecedented is the speed and volume. But make no mistake, what has happened, the reason that everything that is happening now was in the Project 2025 playbook is because this has been the playbook of the GOP since Nixon and Reagan. They're just doing it all without asking permission, worrying about legalities with no guardrails at lightning fast speed. That's what's happening. This isn't some concept.
Right. Break it, sell it off, profit from it, privatize it.
Yeah, and let the middle class suffer. Let working people, people of good faith, suffer.
Yes, and the people who have the least in this country will suffer the most. And to me, this is the part that is really upsetting is cruelty is part of the game plan. Because the more cruelty you can show, the more fear you will garner. And if you keep people in fear...
I couldn't agree with you more. The fear, right, and the cruelty are necessary preconditions to execute this. You got to direct. There's more of us than there are of the billionaire and 100 millionaires, right? So you have to, one, divide us and then get some of us to blame the other section of us and fight amongst each other instead of with the people that have their hand in your pocket. A few more texts before we run out of time. Matt from Middleton. We got to go back to the South Korean method of sending pamphlets around to educate people. Yeah, no kidding. Andrew from Maine. Bigger question might be, who can do something about this? We, the people, won't get an opportunity to cast ballots for president for another 3.5 years. Who can act until then? I'm going to remind you, Supreme Court race in this state, general election, April 1st, midterms. I've given you a couple of to-dos. Call your local and state governments. Support your universities. Support researchers. Support public servants. And ask those leaders of your local and state governments. Governments, what data are you collecting? Are you expanding your data collection efforts? This is so important.
And if you're represented by a Republican in your area, reach out to them and let them know that this is not the way you want it done. The more they hear from everybody, because that data is tracked, the more they hear, the more they can understand.
Yeah, they actually will continue to track input from their constituencies.
Well, they have to, right?
Yep. I want to end with this comment. Thanks, Tom. Thanks, Just P.S. Kevin from Iguanago said, you claim Trump ran on racist ideology. He picked up Black and Hispanic voters. Kevin, the thing about hate, the thing about racism, the thing about isms is that it can be turned so that you hate yourself. It metastasizes in this way. If you convince someone that their identity is something to be ashamed of, it can work in this way too. Go read a little bit about these things, Kevin. It's how it works. It is pernicious and dangerous in this way. That's all we've got time for. I'll stand up for you. I hope you stand up for me, but it is always better when we stand together. Dom Salvia is up next on the Civic Media Radio Network.
This is Madison's Real News and Great Conversation, 92.7 WMDX. Todd Albaugh.
Hey, everybody, join us next time. Luke Mathers will be here for a little Tuesday Tangents with Luke, and we'll preview Governor Evers' budget address. Join us.
The Todd Albaugh Show, weekdays noon till 2.
Are you looking to kick up your nighttime entertainment? Good times await you at the Lazy Wolf Lounge, Madison's East Side place for friends and family to meet for fun and food. Test your knowledge with Monday trivia. Let your inner rock star out with Thursday karaoke, plus live music, and meet all your friends at the Lazy Wolf for the big game. The Lazy Wolf Lounge, 1617 North Stoughton Road in Madison. Follow them on Facebook or at LazyWolfLounge.com.
Enjoying this local program? Find the complete Civic Media lineup at civicmedia.us or the Civic Media app.
This is 92.7 WMDX Columbus, Madison's home for real news and great conversation. A Civic Media station.
ABC News, I'm Dave Packer. Concerned for the passengers and crew, all 80 of them, alive after a Delta plane flipped upside down while landing at Toronto Pearson Airport Monday. The airport's president and CEO, Deborah Flynn.
We are very focused on the care and the concern and the passengers and the crew, some of whom have already been reunified with their friends and their families. Others we have in a comfortable place right here at the airport.
And at least 19 hospitalized, but all injuries are non-life-threatening. A federal judge in Washington denying a request to temporarily bar Elon Musk's Department of Government Efficiency team from accessing sensitive student loan records maintained by the Department of Education. Southwest Airlines slashing 15% of its corporate workforce, 1,750 jobs, the first major layoffs for the airline in 53 years. The Kremlin saying Russia and U.S. officials will meet in Saudi Arabia tomorrow to hash out a peace plan for Ukraine. Not at the talks, Ukraine. This is ABC News.